Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest in health and healing. New information, several studies on coenzyme Q10, also the B-complex, what they do. Then, the United States is getting higher in the world in a way that we don't want. And that is, we're nearly near the top in cancer rates. It means to get a good night's sleep, and what happens when we don't. And black tea, it's big for something, I'll tell you what. From our environmental segment on our Talk Back program today, there won't be any guests, but there will be an opportunity for you to call in. Our number to call in anywhere from Canada and the United States is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Along with talking about health and nutrition, we share a lot of insights on the environment. I'm concerned that many people listening to this radio program around the United States are unaware of how bad the water crisis is. So we're going to talk about 30 reasons a global water crisis is here now. This is from Mike Snyder at EFTDailyNews.com. Then, I'm asked all the time about issues that, such as who controls the money supply, you know, and what say-so do we have over what they do with our money supply. We'll give you the latest from Economic Collapse blog on that. Who controls the money? I'll give you a hint. They're unelected. They're unaccountable. They're the central bank of the world. Do you know who I'm talking about? What's the most powerful bank in the world? What's more powerful than the Federal Reserve or the European Central Bank? You'll know today. So I will be taking your calls throughout the program, so please feel free to call in. First up, coenzyme Q10. I believe it's one of the single most important nutrients we can take because it can help prevent a heart attack or a stroke. Why? Because it thins the blood, but it also gives energy to the heart muscle itself directly. And that's why taking ubiquinol, or coenzyme Q10, three times a day is extremely important to prevent heart attacks. Now, the more energy your heart has, the better it functions. Here's the latest on coenzyme Q10. It's also good for people with Alzheimer's and memory loss. There's a study. The title of the study is called Prophylactic and Effects of Coenzyme Q10 on Diabetic Neuropathic Pain in a study. This was from the Department of Anesthesiology, University of Miami. This was a randomized controlled study, and they found that in the group receiving coenzyme Q10, it helped treat diabetic neuropathy, which is pain. Now imagine how many people are diabetic, imagine how many people have pain, and you get an idea of why this is important. Coenzyme Q10 is non-toxic. It helps so many different systems of oxygenation in the body, the brain, the heart, the liver, the musculature. The low end, 100 milligrams, the high end, 1,000 milligrams, or unless you have something specific, I would go much higher if you had Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, memory loss, but that will help you. Now here's a separate study. This is the Department of Nutrition, Faculty of Health, Shahid University Medical School in Iran. It says, a randomized controlled study involving 60 infertile men with idiopathic conditions found that infertile, that taking 200 milligrams of Q10 for 3 months improved their fertility rates. Improve their sperm. So for those men who are wishing to have a family, a planned pregnancy, and have been unable to, because alcohol will destroy your sperm. Chemicals that you eat will destroy your sperm. A high-fat, high-protein diet will destroy sperm. And if you don't think that's important, and imagine what happens if you are able to have a conception with a defective sperm and then you have a miscarriage or you have a birth defect. Having the healthy sperm is important. And this is one more study showing that it helps do that. Also, a new study out on the subject of B-complex, and it shows that those people taking B-complex are enhancing their overall antioxidant capacity. And that means it can help, especially overweight people, to turn off the inflammation. So 50 milligrams of the B-complex, that's B1, B2, and B6, can make a difference. And that you want to do. Because almost everyone who's overweight is also suffering from inflammation. Obesity or overweight in and of itself is pro-inflammatory. And that can lead to a higher incidence of stroke and heart attack. And that brings me to this important study that was reported on the WebMD. Here's what it says. And this is from the American Institute for Cancer Research. Experts say lifestyle change is needed to reduce nation's cancer rates. We are now 7th highest cancer rate in the world. That's tremendous in a bad way. You never see an ad telling you, here's what's going to happen when you drink the alcohol. Your liver, your kidney, your heart, your brain cells are going to die. You're killing them by the millions every single drink. We don't show that. We're going to harden your arteries and make you more susceptible in your 40s, 30s, never before at this rate, with heart failure and atherosclerosis. We're going to make your joints swollen and painful. We're going to cause itis in your intestine. We're going to destroy your vitamins, because that's what alcohol does. Wipes out your vitamin C, your B complex. As a result, your homocysteine level goes up, and as a result of that, you're more susceptible to a heart attack. We're going to give you more of the bad cholesterol with your diet. We're going to take more protein in. So almost every single cooking show has bad food with jerks or megalomaniacs or this Ramsay fool and the rest of these twerps who primp and prance around like a strutting peacock, all about arrogance, all about producers saying, make it worse. You're not mean enough. You're not angry enough. You're not despicable enough. We're giving you a lot of money. You're getting a lot of popularity. People love you. Be meaner. Maybe I missed something when I took a look at one of these shows and I saw the worst of human nature in every single scene. And that's a popular show. What message does that give people? Be nasty, be in your face, be mean, be ruthless, be greedy, be immoral, and you'll be loved and made rich. Kind of perverse, isn't it? Well, also then we start looking at the restaurants in every city in America. You'll see one program now that goes to every city looking for the best food, and the best food's always massively unhealthy. Fried in deep fat or grilled for hours or spicy to where it would actually burn your system. I've seen a meal given on television last week that was 5,000 calories. For the person eating it, that's a 3-day supply of calories. Well, what's that, all that's going to happen when you eat all those calories at once and all that protein? You're going to kill your liver and your kidneys and your heart, and you're going to become obese. But man, you're loving it. You're getting that huge sandwich. So the alcohol does it to us, the overeating, the bad foods, the only kind we know how to eat in America today, if you're the average American. And don't worry, there's so many other morbidly obese, fat people out there, you're going to be in good company. You just keep letting out the dresses and letting out the shirts and letting out everything. But along the way, you let your brains and common sense and reason, discipline, and self-love out also. But don't worry about that. You should. And then one day you wake up and you find out we're seventh highest in the world, on our way racing to be number one in the world. Now, how do you reconcile that we're number one in the world in cancer, or going there, seventh now, but we're also spending more on treating cancer than any country in the world, including more than China or India, that have five times our population? Four and a half times each. And yet, we talk about we know what we're doing. Really? What exactly do we do right? Tell me. I want to hear it. I want to hear what we do right when it comes to anything. Call me now. I'm interested in hear the Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, We Are Exceptional. And I'm going to throw it right back at you at things we're exceptional that we shouldn't brag about. But we do. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Next up, giving makes people feel better than getting, in rich and poor nations alike. This is the American Psychological Association, and it says, feeling good about spending money on someone else rather than on personal benefit may be a universal response among people in both impoverished countries and rich nations. Quote, our findings suggest that the psychological reward experienced from helping others may be deeply ingrained in human nature, emerging in diverse cultural and economic contexts. This was from the Simon Fraser University in Canada. Now, the findings provide the first empirical evidence that the warm glow of spending on someone else rather than on oneself may be a widespread component of human psychology. This was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. So what they're finding is when you go out of your way to help others, it gives you a better feeling about yourself. And I would agree with that. I think that always helping other people is, it's just harmonizing with the best you can be in life. Lack of sleep can make our genes less active. And this is from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Here's what it says. Just 1 week of abnormal, insufficient sleep is enough to dramatically alter the activity of human genes. The research was done at the University of Surrey in England, and it revealed that insufficient sleep, meaning less than 6 hours a night, affects the activity of over 700 of our genes. These genes are associated with controlling stress, immunity, and inflammation. So, what that means is, if you don't get enough sleep, you're far more likely to have cognitive impairment, heart disease, and obesity, and be stressed. So, that's important to get your genes sleep. Next up, black tea consumption is linked to decreased diabetes risk. And this is a good thing because green tea and black tea are easy to get, inexpensive. Here's what it says. With more and more cases of diabetes into the hundreds of millions worldwide, into about 80 million in the United States diagnosed and pre-diabetic, we're approaching one-third of the American population is diabetic. This is a harsh truth in light of the fact that diabetes is a condition affecting all organs in your body. And black tea is simply one way to help. So results of a recent study indicate that the incidence of type 2 diabetes is lower in those that drink black tea. And that's because of the chemicals in black tea. The catechins, they improve communication between insulin and glucose control, which is your blood sugar, and in the process protect the body from damaging effects of excess sugar in the blood. Quote from the study. These original study results are consistent with previous biological, physiological, and ecological studies conducted on the potential of black tea on diabetes and obesity. They provide valuable additional scientific information on this global level. So what is it? Well, it's the flavonoids. The flavonoids are abundant in black tea, the phytochemicals that are so important for us. So have your black tea. And one other thing, if you want to help reduce brain damage in newborns, have fish oil. Research from a team of scientists at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons in the Department of Neuroscience found that this was a novel use of the fish oil. It reduced brain trauma in newborn mice. Hence, we should consider this for newborn humans. This was in PLOS One, a major medical journal. It's the DHA. And what works in a mice brain, also very similar to what works in a human brain. What it does, very simply, DHA is a very powerful anti-inflammatory. Now, since inflammation is the root of many chronic diseases, DHA, or omega-3 fatty acid oil, is widely beneficial to helping people with your brain, turn off inflammation in your heart, asthma, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoporosis, sepsis, cancer, even dry eye disease, macular degeneration. It can make an enormous difference. So mothers who are breastfeeding, make sure you're getting your omega-3 fatty acids because you're passing on the helpful DHA right through your breast milk. That's important. I'm Gary Knoll. Time for your calls. We're going to take a lot of them, and I have other things on the environment to share as well, and I'll get to those in a few moments. Back in a moment with your calls. 888-874-4888. Say hello to Bryn in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Bryn.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
My question is, the churches are encouraging fasting for Easter, and I'd just like to know the proper way you suggest to do this.
Very simple. Start your day with a protein shake and put in some coconut oil, some omega-3 fatty acid oil, your favorite liquid, let's say like a rice milk or almond milk or tomato juice or apple juice, any of those are fine. Add in about 20 to 25 grams of high-quality vegetable protein. Throw in a handful of your favorite nuts, raw pistachios, almonds, cashews, macadamias, walnuts, any of those. Throw in some berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. Put in a teaspoon of your favorite compounding green powder and your red powder so you get your fruits and vegetables. Now, you're good to go. You have your essential fatty acids, your amino acids, your high-quality fibers, your heart-friendly and brain-friendly antioxidants. If you want to put some extra vitamin C in, that's fine too. Now, what's going to happen is you're going to end up flooding the body with good nutrition. Then, throughout the rest of the day, you can have juices, like a nice grapefruit with orange juice. That's fine. An apple and celery, apple and cucumber, that's another one, that's good. And then distilled water. So that way you've taken in no solid food as such. You've allowed your metabolism to benefit. And you've honored your day of fasting. Because you haven't sat down to a meal. You haven't eaten any actual food as a food. You've just simply consumed it as a beverage. So your body is getting the benefit. That's how I would do it. Okay?
Well, thanks. Well, thank you. Would that also help me with the detox process? Wouldn't this be a good time to also detox your body, too?
It sure would. Absolutely.
Appreciate your advice, sir.
All the best to you.
You too. Have a good day.
And that's Bryn from Louisville, Kentucky. Let's go over and say Rita from Princeton, New Jersey. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I have a friend who recently, last year, had chemo given to him after he was discovered with a tumor in his colon. And now he has a very diminished sensation in his hands and feet. And what can he do?
Several things.
To regain that? Is it just a matter of time, or is there something that you would suggest?
Well, I would suggest that he use chelation therapy that can bring back sensation.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe he should be using magnets in his socks.
Magnets where?
Magnets, like a magnetic sock
that he can
wear at night.
Uh-huh.
And then he can put magnets in his shoe during the daytime. That's helped a lot of people with diabetic neuropathy.
Oh.
Then I would suggest acupuncture, which can open up the meridians that have been blocked due to the chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Qigong therapy that helps rebalance the energy overall.
Mm-hmm.
That's the approach I would take. I would also increase the amount of B1, B6, and folic acid, probably 200 milligrams of each day. And increase the amount of quercetin, the bioflavonoid, to about 7 times a day, between 500 to 1,000 milligrams. All of those are known to enhance resensitizing any part of the body, not just the feet, where there's been a dulling of sensation. Okay?
Well, okay, thank you very much. You know, I did speak with him. He lives in the south of Chile. And the first thing I said to him, I said, maybe chelation therapy. And he said, well, we don't have that down here. So I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up for him.
He does have maca powder down there.
M-A-C-A. Maca, oh.
All right, that will help. He has mesquite powder down there. That will help.
Uh-huh.
He also has Lucinia powder, and he has acai.
Uh-huh.
All of those are really super rich in polyphenols that can also benefit the body. Okay?
Great. Thank you. What's the one that you said after mesquite? Before acai?
Mesquite, let's see, the maca.
Yes, but you said another one before acai.
Lucinia.
Oh, how do you spell that?
L-U-C-E-N-A.
E-N-A. Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I've been getting a number of emails from people in your audience from all over the United States. Very impressive. The only problem is they're all asking pretty much the same question, and that is, even though you spent a lot of time talking about the fiscal crisis that we're in the country, a lot of people still aren't grasping this financial mess that we're in, and they're saying, should we support cutting spending, or should we be expanding spending? Should we be expanding jobs, and how so? How? What is this financial mess rooted in, and how can they be a part of fixing it, or who can they support who can fix it?
All right, let's go through this in the very basic way. The government is really no different at one level than you or I. It should be able to live within its income, but it can't. There's about $1.3 trillion more each year that is owed than we have income for. And when you look at how much the expense is above the actual budget, they have to borrow that money, which means they have to pay interest on that money. So why do we have this problem? Well, it has to do with three areas. The first is the size of government itself and whether or not it really meets the needs of the people. Now, I'll ask you a question in return. If you knew that the Pentagon and the Defense Department and has hidden money not directly in its budget, but it has money in other departments, so it doesn't look like it's as bad as it is, but you're still paying for what amounts to a offensive budget, like making new nuclear weapons. That comes under the budget of the Department of Energy instead of the Pentagon. And the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, because those are still ongoing, they don't count that as a regular fixed budget, because the amount of money is always fluctuating. When you look at the total amount, it's $1.4 trillion. How much of that do you think we need to spend to actually stay safe?
Hardly that much.
Well, it's about $200 billion a year. So what are we spending the rest on that is causing us to go into debt that we're not aware of, that we then have to borrow, and that increases the amount of interest that we have to pay the bankers? Let me give you one example. Have you ever heard of the F-35 airplane?
No, but go ahead.
It's the most expensive weapon system ever created. It's a total failure. It's supposed to be a nuclear-capable stealth bomber. And even the Pentagon has grounded the fleet, saying they're unsafe. And this has been ongoing as unsafe. The total cost of this is $1.5 trillion. You heard
me
right.
God.
Trillion. Not billion. Not million. Trillion. We've already spent $400 billion. And yet, it's already 10 years late. It's 100% over budget, and now we're told that it's too big to kill, meaning we can't stop it. Now, why can't we? Because of the politics behind the scenes, where people who were once powerful in the military-industrial complex, generals, admirals, people in procurement, they're hired to go to work for private corporations, so they can go back in there and make sure that they have ongoing deals. Legislators go to work for these companies afterwards as special consultants. So now you have a person that used to be a powerful person to oversee all the military procurement and all these military systems. Now that person no longer works as a senator or House member. Now they're a consultant. So they walk right back into Congress and say, we need this airplane or submarine or whatever it may be. And everyone agrees that you got to go along with it, because sooner or later you're going to be out of a job as a legislator, and you've got a very lucrative job making a whole lot more money in the private sector. So we end up with a military-industrial complex that is so far out of control, and yet neither the left nor the right, corporate left or corporate right, is willing to challenge it. Now, what would $400 billion that we've wasted, totally wasted at this point, what would that get you? What could you get for that? Well, how about this? We could rebuild our entire infrastructure in the United States for that amount of money. That
wow.
means all of our bad bridges and tunnels and dikes and levees and dams and all of the things, our gas mains and water mains. We could make all that new and vital again with that money. We could provide every single person in the United States with single-payer health care for 4 years with that same amount of money. We could feed the 18 million hungry children and be able to find gainful employment for over 2 million unemployed. So you see, we spend the money. Even the so-called smart one, Bernie Sanders in Vermont and Patrick Leahy in Vermont, they both have refused to ask all about the problems of this. They're still supporting it. Why? Because guess where they want to build the big plant? In Vermont.
Oh, my.
Okay? Do you understand how it all works? Burlington, that's where they want to put this. Burlington, Vermont. One of the top choices for the base. And so someone wants to buy votes? Well, it's an easy way to buy votes. See what I brought you? I brought you the bacon. I brought you the jobs. Nobody asked, do we need this? This is making us better. It's all about the selfish pursuit of maintaining your position of power. Now, I could name you, I have evidence of at least 3,000 contracts like this, where the information is not needed, the products are not even of any value to us, and yet we pay for it every year, and then it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. No one ever questions it, no one ever takes it away. Let me give you another example of why we're in this financial mess. Have you ever heard of Peter Van Burden, B-U-R-E-N, Burden?
No.
Okay, he worked with our State Department. Here's what he said. Let me quote him verbatim. Why the invasion of Iraq was the single worst foreign policy decision in American history. Quote, the U.S. reconstruction plan for that country was drowning in rivers of money foolishly spent. At the centerpiece for those American efforts, at least Plan A, that our invading troops would be greeted with flowers and sweets as liberators. That crashed and burned. We had managed to reconstruct nothing of significance. First conceived as a Marshall Plan for the new American century, 6 long years later, it had devolved into farce. In my act of the play, the U.S. spent $2.2 million to build a huge facility in the boondocks. Ignoring the stark reality that Iraqis had raised and sold chickens locally for 2,000 years, the U.S. decided to finance the construction of a central processing facility, having the Iraqis running the plant purchase local chickens, pluck them and slice them up with complex machinery brought in from Chicago, package the breasts and wings in plastic wrap, and then truck it all over to local grocery stores. Perhaps it was the desert heat. But this made sense at the time, and the plan was supported by the Army, the State Department, the White House. Elegant in conception, at least to us, it failed to account for a simple few things, like a lack of regular electricity or logistics systems to bring the chickens to and from the plant, or working capital, or there were no grocery stores. As a result, the gleaming 2.2 million plant processed not a single chicken. To use a few of the catchwords of the moment, it transformed nothing. It empowered no one. It stabilized and economically uplifted not a single Iraqi. It just sat there empty, dark, and unused in the middle of the desert, like the chickens we were plucked. In keeping with the madness of the times, however, the simple fact that the plant failed to meet any of its real-world goals did not mean the project wasn't a success. In fact, the factory was an enormous success in the United States media. After all, for every propaganda-driven visit to the plant, my group stocked the place with hastily purchased chickens, geared up the machinery, and put on a dog and pony or chicken and rooster show. In the dark humor of that moment, we christened the place the Tompkin and Chicken Factory. In between the media and the VIP visits, it sat in the dark, only to rise with the rooster's cry each morning. Some camera crew came out for a visit. Our factory was thus considered a great success. Robert Ford, then at the Baghdad Embassy and now America's rugged shadow ambassador in Syria, said his visit was the best day out of Iraq. General Raymond Odinero, then commanding all U.S. forces in Iraq, sent bloggers and camp followers to view the victory project. Some of the propaganda, which claimed that, quote, teaching Iraqis methods to flourish on their own gives them the ability to provide their own stability without needing to rely upon Americans, end quote, is still online. We weren't stupid, mind you. In fact, we all felt smart and clever enough to learn to look the other way. The chicken plant was a funny story at first, a kind of an insider's joke. You all think you know the punchline. Hey, we wasted $2.2 million. That's a small amount of money in a war whose cost will someday be in the trillions. Really, at the end of the day, what was the harm? End quote. Well, how about this? The American public was lied to. The American media participated in the lie. The entire administration knew the lie, and everyone at the State Department and the Defense Department knew it was a lie. We have thousands of these boondoggles, thousands, all over. And they all cost a lot of money. But what the heck? Like this guy said, it's only money. We had $5 billion in cash stolen. Not a single person caught. Largest theft in history. That was in Iraq. Well, we wasted $1.5 trillion between Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay. We waste another $1.5 trillion, $400 billion already spent, on just one single fighter. We have bureaucracies in Washington that have so much redundancy that you'll have as many as 15 different organizations doing the same identical work in a single agency. And we have hundreds of these agencies. So when I say that 50% of all federal employees, state employees, could be let go, I am serious. But no one's going to do that. In fact, they want to grow it for political reasons. So if you want to know why we're in the mess we're in, that's one of the problems. Enormous corruption, fraud, no insight, no oversight. Then the next one is we have an enormous amount of contracts that were made in the 1950s, 60s, right up through recently, where we guarantee people a certain retirement and an interest. And the trouble is today in the world we live in, we cannot meet those payments. And cities, communities are going bankrupt. And so they're cutting back services that impact all of us. There should be a reasonable way of negotiating to see how we can deal with this, because otherwise just that alone is enough to bankrupt America. But we're not dealing with it, because nobody wants to be the person that says, maybe we can rethink this and change it. So then that's a political poison pill to touch that. And then there's fraud in virtually all of our programs. Medicare, Medicaid, massive fraud. In one city alone, they found there were hundreds of individuals who were submitting income tax returns for children that didn't live there. And billions, $4 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars a year, going to people who were submitting their income tax forms, even though they were not legal workers, but they still had to file an income tax return. Fine. But they were declaring exemptions and getting refunds. But when checked, the exemptions weren't there. One house alone had over 26 different children supposedly living in it. So when a news crew visited and only found one little girl, the man just openly said, look, you know, we felt we could get away with it, and we did. Too bad. Okay, again, you could say, so what? It's only $4 billion in one kind of fraud. Who pays for that? We do. That's another part of the problem, massive fraud. All the agencies of government want to keep growing like a cancer, metastasizing. Do they serve our real and authentic needs? And if they do, at what level do they? If you would look at a person sitting across from you, Luann, who is 700 pounds, who has heart disease, diabetes, and cancer, you would advise that they go on a diet and restrict their excessive income or calories. We have to do the same with all governmental agencies. They've, for decades, they have been highly political. They have bought their loyalty. And they have all these patronage jobs, and they're corrupt to the bone. We pay for it. By the way, they're paying for it in Greece, in Spain, in Italy, all corrupt governments historically. But as long as they weren't taking away your Social Security or weren't taking away your pensions or weren't asking you to pay more taxes, you just look the other way and say, so what? Well, now, with austerity, they're saying, we're taking away your pensions by 20 to 30%. We're making the cost of living more expensive. You're not making any more money, and people are dumpster diving. Now they're angry. Why weren't they angry during this whole process? Because human nature tends to be greedy and indifferent. But then you've got the big problem, taxes. And to me, that's this, one of the single most important problems we have. And we're not even going to talk about in our society how to resolve them. Last year, corporate America gave about $250 or $260 billion in taxes. Now, considering that they're holding $32 trillion in profits and offshore accounts, when you consider that in the United States, there were at least 100 companies that made over $1 billion in profit, and they didn't pay any taxes on that. Some made as much as $2 or $3 billion and didn't pay taxes. Well, how fair is that? That's unfair. But they learn how to play the system. They can hire the big-time attorneys. They've been able to make sure that there are loopholes in the tax code. My view is that if all the corporations paid a flat fee, period, no deductions, A, you can eliminate the IRS. That would save us billions of dollars. You could eliminate all the accountants. You don't need all that. It's just one flat fee, 15%. Every corporation has to pay 15%. No deductions. But you get to keep 85%. That is better than the system now. It would reduce overall corporate taxes substantially. But it will also mean you can't figure out a way to cheat the system. And that's all that the big corporations have been doing. Had we received the actual income into the Treasury that comes from legitimate taxes, we would be in a positive cash position today. So this isn't something new. This has been going on. So one flat corporate tax. I believe we should eliminate personal income tax altogether. I don't believe people should be taxed on their work. And then instead put in a series of sales taxes that graduate up the more essential and least expensive items, the lower the tax, but the more exclusive items, the more luxury items, the higher the tax. So fine, if you have the money and you want to buy something that's luxurious, you have the money, pay the tax on it. And I believe that would help us tremendously. Then have a taxed amnesty. Give amnesty to all individuals or corporations if they repatriate their money back into the United States. I think that a fair amount would be 15%. Now, 15% is a decent amount of money. Put it in, if you have $32 trillion in profits stored offshore, if we got 10% of that, that's $3.2 trillion. So we're talking about $5 trillion just from that repatriation. If we had corporations pay their fair income tax, one flat tax, eliminate the IRS and all these accountants and these loopholes, then that would give us an additional $1 trillion. Well, suddenly we're at $6 trillion in income we didn't have before. And then you would start to see, bring down government to the size it is needed to effectively help people, guard our common interest, and stop all the subsidies to all corporations. No more subsidizing big oil, big bank, and take all the banks that are insolvent, which are all the banks. The only profit they can show is because the money they've received in bailouts. On their own, they would all be insolvent. So make them insolvent, break them down, and get rid of them. That's what we should be doing. So if you did that, then your income and your expenses within 3 years, we would wipe out a $16 trillion deficit. We would virtually have a surplus. And that's without cutting programs essential to those, simply clean them up of their fraud. And that's just an easy way of doing it. Otherwise, you will never have any sense made out of our current economic standings, because you have too many powerful interests who are going to keep the people that they control in Congress or the White House supporting their position. So the public at some point has to get up on board on this and see what's necessary. And, you know, it's very easy for people to say, well, of course it's bad to have a $1 trillion bomber. And why are we now doubling down on trying to have the first strike against China and Russia? We're borrowing money from China. China has been our lifeline. $1.8 trillion they've given us. We've been importing their cheap crap, you know, to sell Walmart and Kmart. We've exported our jobs and factories, thousands, to China. Why are we then wanting 1,500 to 1,800 sea and air-based strike, first-strike cruise missiles by 2015? Why? But the prompt global strike force wants that, because some military-industrial complex corporation working with their legislators, and you can bet those legislators are on the intelligence advisory committees and within the Pentagon, they're saying, prepare a new Cold War. And so that means that when we start gearing up against Russia and China in another Cold War, then that means that China and Russia have to start looking at what they can do, so it, the whole world gears up and corporations are selling the technology like crazy. So why don't we ask our legislators, why are you gearing up for another Cold War against China and Russia? Why aren't you seeking peace, cooperation? So that's the political illiteracy and how it impacts us in a negative way in our society. Hope that answers your question.
Boy, Gary, you know, it almost sounds like the whole reason why we created this country in the first place, the whole reason why we had the American Revolution, because people were disgusted with having to pay taxes to an already bloated king. And it's,
yes,
it's the same old, same old. It's come full circle. It's a little more high tech. There's just zero accountability. That seems to be the prevailing theme. There's just no accountability. And it's all about the people on top just taking more and more and more.
You are correct. And there is never enough for someone or a corporation that feels they need more in order to survive. You know, there was a time when people in America who worked in corporations prided themselves on long-term sustainability. You knew that you would not lose your job as long as you did your work right and were responsible. And the captains of industry for about 40 years, they went to the same church or synagogue. They lived in the same community. They might have had a nicer house, but their kids were friends of yours. And all that changed in the 1970s. When a group of individuals led by T. Boone Pickens, Carl Icahn, Saul Steinberg, and Ivan Botsky, and Michael Milken figured how easy it would be if they took well-run and profitable and financially conservative companies, and they went in and they greenmailed them, meaning you buy enough stock in a company and then you start demanding more profits. You demand that anything that's not highly profitable be sold off. And so they finally give you enough money to go away. And then from that, the junk bonds, and from that came the corporate raiders. Corporate raiders would come in and buy a company, strip off its assets, load it up with debt. And in time, like Linens and Things and Circuit City and thousands of others, they couldn't maintain the debt load and they went into bankruptcy. But why don't you go back and look at all those companies before they were purchase and leverage buyouts? The vast majority were extremely well-run and financially stable companies. The whole mega growth, the consolidation of power, and the idea was that people like Bain Capital and Mitt Romney and the other people like them, very amoral people, and forget that he's a Mormon, the whole amoral concept of wrapping yourself in that I'm a religious person, does that mean you're not going to do something bad? Or does that mean, like a lot of religious people, you'll do only bad? Did I forget the Inquisition? Did I forget the pedophilia in the Catholic Church and hidden by this particular pope? Did I forget the massacre of 20 to 40 million Native Americans in Africa and the United States and South America and Canada? Did I forget the abuse against women? No, I haven't. I'm one of those people that just has a hard time reconciling self-righteous indignation by religious leaders with the reality of how they got where they're at today. All right? So in any case, what we have is we have a group of people today that do not care about sustainability, whether you can pay your bills, whether the town that their factory's in will survive. They only care about market share, profit at the end of the year. So if they got to fire 1,000 people and move that factory off to China to make more money, even though they're rich beyond belief, that's exactly what they're going to do. But mind you, we have stood by and allowed them to do this. Where were all the unions in America when 58,000 factories closed in the last 13 years? 58,000 factories. Where were you in demanding a general strike? Where were you when you saw a plant that had been there for 100 years close and outsourced to China? You went right in there and you supported the Democrats under Clinton. You supported the Democrats under Obama, who were among the chief architects for exporting jobs. That's what the union leaders have done to their membership. Shame on them. But then again, there is no shame because they're not held accountable, not even by their own membership. So on one hand, we are doing everything humanly possible to do everything wrong in the United States. I don't know anything we do right. I mean, I don't know anything on public policy, health policy, financial policy, educational policy, foreign policy, environmental policy, human rights policy, protection of our constitutional rights policy. We don't do anything right. We do everything wrong. And yet, you won't hear a word like that said on any of the major media. So, one day you wake up and you're exactly where you should be because you didn't pay attention to the basics. But the people who needed more, they're getting it. The only thing that's going to save America at this moment, the only thing that can save it, is if there's a natural disaster or complete social breakdown, where those institutions, individuals who've maintained absolute, virtually indomitable power, the oligarchs, the technocrats, the bureaucrats, the plutocrats, and the fascistic regimes of corporate marriage to government power, if they are challenged. That won't happen in the United States. It will in other countries, not here. We're too fat, we're too lazy, we're too distracted by our own lives. We're disconnected. We're fragmented. We're separated from any sense of the whole that we once had. That's not going to come back. Those days are gone. So look around you, and you'll see it'll only get worse, but it'll get worse by measures that are not quantum, imperceptible, one day at a time. And then one day you're going to wake up and say, what happened? Well, what happened was that they bailed out Wall Street, but not Main Street. The 20 largest banks got $20 trillion, and 9 million homeowners lost their homes and had to go couch surfing. They got interest-free money that they could then accumulate to the quantum leap of 100. They could take $1 and borrow 100 against it using the international banks. And yet, at the same time, you were paying on a payday loan as much as 500% interest. Impossible to pay. And then they created private debt prisons. And then you're taken to jail because you couldn't pay a debt and you couldn't pay the interest on a debt. And now you can't get out of jail because they charge you every day for being there. And you think, how in the world did this happen? Well, friend, you had some choices along the way. You simply made the wrong choice. You made the Cardassians, and you made, the Duck Dynasty, and you made Storage Wars, and you made Dancing with the Stars. You made all these other things more important than just looking at the world because you felt it was just too confusing and wasn't of interest to you. And they were hoping on that.
And don't forget the zombies, the Walking Dead.
Yeah. So that's where we're at, and that's why we're there. So that's a little long answer to your problem that you raised at the beginning, but try to understand our financial issue. But that's the best I can do to let you know that if you can't balance your own life, and you're not going to pay attention to how the government's not balancing theirs, and if you don't demand a strict way of living on not going into debt, and then you allow your government to go into debt in unlimited amounts of ways, then this is the outcome. You should throw them out of office, all of them, and I mean all of them. I don't see a single populist person in Congress. Not one. Now, these are pure political animals, and they know exactly what to say and how to say it, when to say it, to keep our allegiance. Hope that answers your question. Thanks for the call, Luann. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I say, but